more Idaho Matters right now. I'm Gemma Gaudette. A new book called The Rage of Innocence, How America Criminalizes Black Youth, confronts our country's irrational, manufactured fears of black youth and makes a powerfully compelling case that the crisis in American policing begins with this relationship with black children. Now, author Kristen Henning drew upon 25 years of experience representing black youth in Washington, D.C.'s juvenile court. She is joining us live today for a deeper conversation about her new book. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. So happy to be here.
I have to tell you, this book, it was so impactful. I think it is so powerful. So first, thank you for writing it. With that said, you write in the book about discrimination, in particular in policing when it comes to children of color. I do want to talk about that in a moment, but I'd like to start the conversation about what struck me is that there are these issues of discrimination, not just in policing. When you look at children of color, we see it in schools, we see it in courts, we see it in social institutions. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that question because so many people miss this and think that it's a book solely about policing. And so when I talk about the, you know, the criminalization of Black children, we're not just talking about officers in a blue uniform, but we're actually talking about all of us who fear and criminalize Black children when we see them on the streets, when we see them on the playground, when we see them in schools, as you alluded to. And so what I do in this book is I try to weave together stories about the Black children that I have represented in Washington, D.C., as well as children that we have heard about from across the country to demonstrate the ways in which criminalization really operates. One of the ways that it operates is the ways in which we irrationally fear Black children who are engaged in normal adolescent behaviors, meaning the things, all of the things that you and I did and everybody else did and white children did when they were children, right? So playing in a park, you know, even playing with a toy gun in a park, throwing snowballs, the music that they listen to, tussling and roughhousing with each other. All of that is an important feature of normal adolescent behavior, right? And so it's really sort of a powerful collection of ways in which the fears of Black children have been so embedded in the American psyche. And so that even those of us who think that we are committed to principles of racial equity still find ourselves afraid of Black children.
In particular, Kristen, what I find fascinating is when you see small Black children, right? Maybe about the under the age of about 7 or 8, right? And you see just, you know, people like gushing over these children. Oh, they're so cute. Aren't they beautiful? Et cetera, et cetera. But all of a sudden, Black youth, in particular young men, go from being a cute child to a criminal in the eyes of white America. And I would think that all of a sudden, the trauma that causes.
Absolutely. So, you know, two comments in response to that. There is research, empirical research, demonstrating that our racial biases are so powerful that we have aged up. We see Black children as older than they are. So both police officers and civilians in one powerful study by Philip Atiba Goff has demonstrated that people see Black children as 4.5 years or more older than they actually are. So, you know, you think about a Tamir Rice who was shot at the age of 12. Think about the visual image of him as being 16. Some of you may remember the story of Jeremiah Harvey. And if you haven't, read my book, but it's the young boy who was 9 years old in New York, in Brooklyn in particular, who was perceived to be sexually aggressive because he walked past a woman in a store and his book bag accidentally brushed against her behind. And she turned around and saw him and thought he had touched her intentionally and touched her in a sexual way. This is a 9-year-old child. And then, you know, the research also shows that, you know, that the use of force against children mm-hmm. as young as you talked about, 7, 8, and 9 years old, is much more likely by police officers when engaging with a Black child than with a white child. And indeed, the long-term consequences, the trauma, is absolutely profound. There is research demonstrating that Black children who live in heavily surveilled, heavily policed neighborhoods, who are the frequent targets of stops and frisk and arrest and use of force, experience high rates of fear, anxiety, depression, hopelessness. They become hypervigilant, meaning that they're always on guard and worrying mm-hmm. About, you know, the next time they might be targeted. So it's really traumatic.
And you also write about, when we talk about the issue of policing, because of this idea that they are older, that they are more criminalized, that we're literally socializing a generation of Black youth to live in fear, to live in yep. resentment. And frankly, then you have this idea of resisting police. And I think sometimes in white America, you scratch your head like, well, why didn't they just obey? It's like, well, right. It's not that simple.
It's not. And again, I invite listeners to remember what they were like when they were adolescents. Or mm-hmm. even better, if you're a parent, to think about how your teenagers respond, right? Teenagers are impulsive, emotional, reactive. They test boundaries. And here's what's really important. They're fairness fanatics, meaning they're going to resist
labels. Yes, they are.
Labels, right? Exactly. They're going to resist labels. They can see what we can all see, is that they are being treated differently for the same adolescent behaviors, and that they are being criminalized, they are being hurt, and they're terrified to come in contact with the police. And over time, that builds into what we talk about, this hypervigilance that I mentioned earlier, just being on guard, not trusting, and even resenting the police. And so when they encounter the police, just like any of us as adults, and certainly as an adolescent, we want to speak back. We want to talk back. And then what happens, it's a vicious cycle. Our racial biases cause police officers to view that talking back as more aggressive and more threatening than it is. So they miss the fact that this is just an adolescent. This is an adolescent who's blowing off steam, who is speaking up for their rights, who is resisting labels. And so it really, the tensions, I say, between Black youth and police officers really have become at an all-time high. And we've got to work our way out of that.
Mm-hmm. One thing that really struck me as well, and I think part of this is because, I mean, I am white. I am raising 2 white boys. They are almost 10 and 13 years old. But it is this idea that even though I think that as boys get older, they are looked at as more of a threat, right? Whether they are white or Black. But with that said, what struck me was how white youth are frankly kind of afforded a freedom when it comes to being able to push boundaries, and even things when it comes to like drug use or sex, they're kind of given this space to figure themselves out. Yet there is this implicit bias, I think, even when we think we don't have it, that we as white Americans we don't allow freedom for these Black youth. It is all of a sudden like they are criminalized, frankly, for experimenting just like white kids do.
Absolutely. And what's so incredibly important about what you're saying is that I think we forget how important that testing of the boundaries is and the experimentation of adolescence is. We are sort of terrified about, as a parent, of thinking about children experimenting with drugs or experimenting with sex. But the research shows it's actually healthy that we want children to test and experiment within safe limits, because that helps them not be afraid to try new things as adults. It helps them to develop intimate personal relationships that we think are so important in adulthood. So it's a part of the natural developmental evolution. But we, exactly as you said, we deprive that to Black children by criminalizing those very behaviors. And so what I often say is that while white youth are allowed to enjoy the privileges of adolescence, to include physical safety, public affirmation, adventure, experimentation, extended periods of academic and social freedom, Black children are suspended at school, they're stopped, frisked, arrested, they're prosecuted, they're tried and treated like adults. And it's just, it's so incredibly unfortunate that we deprive Black children of this important stage of development. We almost erase it. They go from the cute, you know, three-year-old, if they, you know, all the way to the adults,
right,
as we talked about. And that adolescent development years are so important. They are second, that developmental stage is second in importance only to the 0 to 3 years when the brain is forming. But the adolescent brain development is equally important. And we've got to give young people the freedom to test and experiment.
How then does what we've seen worldwide, frankly, this outrage at social, at racial injustice and inequality, how has that then impacted in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years in particular, Black youth in America?
So, you know, it's interesting. I think a couple of things. There's been some research on for example, the traumatic effects of even watching sort of racial discrimination on television or living a life of racial discrimination. So there was one study in 2020 that talked about young people that were surveyed, for example, just so happens to be in my city, surveyed were encountering 5 racially discriminatory encounters per day. So that is everything from being having someone lock their car door when they walk past, having someone make a racial slur, being treated as if they're inferior in school, or being stopped unfairly in their perception by the police. And so what we're seeing is a couple of things. We're seeing some of the trauma that I already talked about, but we're also seeing more activism. And I think that's another really important piece, is that Black youth are learning to speak up for themselves. And I gotta say, it takes, you know, extraordinary heroic efforts by parents, Black parents, to really equip Black children with that positive self-esteem when they're facing such negative encounters every day. So it just takes heroic parenting, heroic teaching to really highlight Black achievement, Black success, and to teach Black children how to speak up for themselves. What worries me is that as Black children learn to speak up for themselves and learn how to protest, they're still adolescents and they do it the best way they can. It might not be as articulate and refined and organized as you or I might as an adult, but it's an important part, of the democratic process. And so we've got to give way and give space to that. And what we're seeing instead is that young Black people who protest, unfortunately, are often criminalized for that, criminalized for participating, for example, in quiet, peaceful Black Lives Matter protest.
I thank you so much for talking with us today about this. We've been talking with the author of the new book. Her name is Kristen Hannah. Kristen Henning. Oh my gosh. I'm looking right at it and I'm saying it wrong. I'm still in our conversation. So anyway, author Kristen Henning, she wrote the book, The Rage of Innocence, How America Criminalizes Black Youth. Thank you for writing this book. I believe it is a necessary read for our time that we are living in right now. It is available at your local bookstores. Kristen, thank you for the conversation.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. More Idaho Matters next.